Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you as we start another year together, sharing support, encouragement, and inspiration. For many of us, the new year symbolizes a fresh start, a chance to refocus, set intentions, and consider the goals we want to achieve in the months ahead. But as we all know, when you're living with either cancer, bowel cancer, or are in an ostomy, setting and achieving resolutions comes with unique challenges and opportunities. This year, I want to talk about intentions for self-growth and self-care. Resolutions don't need to be grand or rigid. Instead, they should be about creating a life where we thrive, feel loved, and feel at home within ourselves. Today, I'd like to share my three top tips for successfully working through your resolutions in a way that's compassionate, meaningful, and lasting. Now, number one, give yourself space. Life with cancer, be it bowel cancer or any form of cancer, or in an ostomy, often comes with physical and emotional as well as mental demands. It's very easy to feel pressured to keep up with others or to push yourself too hard. But one of the most important things you can do is to give yourself space. Space to rest when you're tired, space to feel all your emotions, and space to adjust when things don't go as planned. Instead of creating a resolution list that feels overwhelming, consider focusing on just one or two intentions. Maybe it's to take a short walk each day, to journal your thoughts once a week or daily, or to try a new hobby that brings you joy. Remember that progress is not always linear, and it's okay to take breaks. Giving yourself space is not about giving up, it's about giving yourself the grace to be human. Number two, be kind to yourself. We often speak to ourselves in ways we would never ever dream of speaking to somebody we love. How many times have you scolded yourself for not meeting a goal or feeling guilty for needing extra rest? It's time to change that narrative. One of the most transformative resolutions you can make is to treat yourself with kindness and compassion. Think of it this way. If you were to spend decades with somebody you don't like, life would be unbearable. Now consider that you are with yourself for a lifetime. Wouldn't it make more sense to build a relationship with yourself that's grounded in love and respect? When setbacks occur, remind yourself that you're doing the best you can. Celebrate even the smallest of victories and never, ever underestimate the power of positive self-talk. By being your own ally, you create a foundation for true growth and healing. Number three, don't measure your success against somebody else's journey. Now, in a world of social media highlights and constant comparisons, it's very easy to fall into the trap of measuring your progress against others. But everyone's journey is unique, especially when you're living with cancer or managing life in an ostomy. Your experiences and challenges and triumphs are entirely your own, and they deserve to be celebrated without comparison. Instead of looking outward for validation, turn inward. What does success look like for you? Maybe it's about feeling more comfortable in your own skin, building your stamina, or simply finding joy in small everyday moments. Success isn't about matching somebody else's milestones. It's about creating a life that feels authentic and fulfilling to you. Now, one key to achieve your resolution is consistency. Establishing routines helps turn intentions into habits. Studies show that forming a habit can take anywhere from 18 to 254 days, with an average of 66 days. Simple examples include committing to, like for instance, daily walk or journaling. which can soon feel natural with regular practice. By focusing on small, consistent actions, you create habits that lead to meaningful, lasting change. Stay committed, even on days when motivation feels low, and celebrate every step forward, no matter how small. For example, if you aim to incorporate a short daily walk into your life, which I've actually started doing now, commit to setting a time each day that can help evolve into a natural part of your routine. Similar with journaling, like daily or once a week, it may take a couple of months before it feels effortless. But do it. At the heart of it all is self-love and self-acceptance. It's about recognizing that you're enough exactly as you are. Even if you strive to grow and improve, it's about understanding that your worth isn't defined by what you achieve, but by the person you are. Practicing self-love means showing up for yourself every single day, even when it feels hard. It means looking in the mirror and seeing not just your challenges, but your strength, your resilience, and your beauty. Self-acceptance is about embracing the part of you that you may struggle with realizing that those parts make you uniquely you. Together, self-love and self-acceptance form the cornerstone of a fulfilled life. Now, as we step into the new year, let's do this with intentions rooted in kindness, patience, and love for ourselves. Let's give ourselves the space to grow, the compassion to heal, and the freedom to follow our own path without comparison. Most importantly, let's build a relationship with ourselves that is grounded in care and respect because we are truly worth it. Now, as we continue this journey together, I want to give a special mention to UK Health Radio. I don't know if you know, but they feature over 41 shows covering a wide range of health topics, reaching listeners in more than 54 countries. Their mission is to inspire, inform, and empower people to take control of their health, and they have become a vital resource for individuals navigating challenges like ours. Whether it's through expert interviews, practical advice, or stories of resilience, UK Health Radio offers a platform for connection and growth. Now, if you're looking for more inspiration or information, I highly recommend tuning into the diverse range of shows. Before we take a short commercial break, I'm excited to introduce today's guest, an extraordinary woman from New Zealand with a truly inspiring story. I had tears in my eyes when I read her bio. Facing a devastating diagnosis that initially gave her only 6 months to live, she made a courageous decision that changed everything. With her unwavering support of her family, she underwent life-saving surgery, defying the odds and embracing a new chapter of life. Now, I think it's almost 5 or 6 years on, she is thriving with a colostomy and urostomy, proving that while the journey isn't always easy, it's possible to find joy, purpose, and gratitude in simply being alive. Her message of resilience and strength is one that will inspire and empower anyone navigating their own challenges. So please stay tuned. We'll be back right after this short break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I am truly honored to welcome an incredible, inspiring guest today. She's a mother, a wife, a physiotherapist, and cancer survivor. She is living proof of resilience and the power of never giving up. Diagnosed with cervical cancer at just 35, with a 3-month-old baby and a toddler, she faced unimaginable challenges. When told her cancer was terminal, she refused to accept the defeat, and with the support of her determined family, she traveled halfway across the world for life-saving surgery. Now, almost 6 years on, she is thriving with 2 stoma bags, a colostomy and a urostomy, that saved her life. She rides horses, runs, tackles CrossFit, and most importantly, she's there for her children's milestones, big and small. Her story is one of courage, hope, and a reminder that life's toughest battles can lead to the most beautiful of victories. Please join me in welcoming this remarkable woman all the way from New Zealand. Welcome to the show, Louise Richards.
Thank you very much. Thank you. What a lovely entrance.
Well, what an incredible bio. I was moved to tears when I read it yesterday in preparation for the show. And it's quite a story that you are going to tell us. But perhaps take us back to before you were diagnosed. What was your life like beforehand?
Yeah, I just had a baby. So life was for my second child. Thought that I was healthy and having fun. We went on a little family holiday over to Australia for the first time. We went to the Gold Coast and had a fabulous time. And then, went to see my doctor just because things didn't seem quite right after the birth. Just some bleeding and things that they said was probably hormonal, but maybe we should just check it out, which I'm obviously incredibly glad that my doctor at that time decided to check everything out. And yeah, unfortunately, I found out that it was cancer, which was strange because I had been up to date with all my smear tests and everything like that, and nothing had ever shown. Quite unbelievable. And as you said, I had a very small child, so hormones were all over the place anyway. So really, really emotional time. Mm-hmm. And then had to start my chemotherapy. And one of the most difficult things about that was giving up breastfeeding, mm-hmm. which sounds really silly, but it's a really special bond between you and your baby. So young. I haven't talked about this. So it's gone all the way back for a while. So sorry if I get a bit emotional. So had to wean my baby off within a few days of breastfeeding and started bottle feeding him so that I could start my chemo.
Yeah.
Which went on for 8 weeks. So we had to move 3 hours from where we are now and stay in Auckland for 8 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Which was a huge, huge upheaval for such a young family. And my husband was working, so he tried to take some time off work but couldn't take the whole time. So my parents came over and helped us. Mm-hmm. I was bottle feeding in the middle of the night because my baby was still getting fed a few times in the night. Had the worst chemo hangovers and things, but just kept on going, thinking that it's okay, it'll be a few months and then everything will be over. But unfortunately, the chemo didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably about 4 months later, I think, after finishing everything, I managed to get through the chemo and radiation and start building myself up again, and then had an MRI and it showed that it didn't work, and went down for an examination under anaesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I came out of that not really expecting too much. Didn't think that the tumor had got that big. The MRI hadn't shown anything. And my surgeon came to speak to me in a normal hospital ward. So there were four of us, and my sister had flown over, which was lovely. And she was sat next to me on the bed, and the doctor sort of said, it's not good news. We think the cancer has spread very quickly. And we think that you're not going to survive. So that was, I just looked at her and I said, what do you mean? And she said, I remember it vividly. She looked at me in the eye and said, this cancer is going to kill you.
Mm.
I think you have about 6 months to live, and I don't want to do the operation because I don't think there'll be any point. And a wee bit after that kind of goes a bit blurry. I think my sister asked a few questions, but I'm not really sure what she asked. I think she said something about, but there's only one mass, one tumor, and the lady said yes, but I think it's spreading really quickly, and it's not in her lymph nodes, but I think it will be soon, or it is. Anyway, and my sister said to me afterwards, you know, if she wasn't there, she wouldn't have believed me the way that this lady just wrote me off. And my as I explained to you before, my sister's a doctor, so she was shocked that somebody could just that was it. So I went outside and phoned my husband, who was in the car park just outside his work, and said, I'm really sorry, but it's really bad news. I've got 6 months to live, and yeah, he didn't know what to say. And then we had to drive up the road, which was an interesting journey. I think we just the really weird thing, you just start laughing about ridiculous things, but you just had to sort of get through. And then I had to phone my parents, which was horrific as well. And I remember my dad telling me at the time, "Oh, well, what we're going to have the best 6 months. What do you want to do?" And I said, "Oh, I want my kids to see the snow," which I know everybody coming from the UK, especially at the moment, I know you've got loads of snow. But and he said, "Okay, we'll make that happen. We're going to do everything." So it went on like that for a few days, and as I said to you, I couldn't bear even looking at my children. Excuse me, looking at my children playing, because it just hurt so much not knowing that I wasn't going to be there for them. And then a couple of days later, my brother phoned and said, "Do you know what? I don't understand this. Doesn't seem right." He's another doctor, so I'm incredibly lucky for that. So he started emailing people in America and just everywhere he could, saying, you know, is there something that can be done? And then this lady in Scotland, who was at the same hospital that my sister worked, heard about me and phoned me and said, "I've heard about your case. Send me the MRI." So that was a rigmarole trying to get that over there too. And then a few days later, she phoned me and said, "I would operate. Get yourself on a plane now, and yeah, and we'll see what we can do." So yeah, it was amazing. And then when I got over there and she said I had to have stomas, I didn't really want that either, but the alternative was not being alive. So yes, started to look at into stomas and try to understand all of that, but I didn't really care. At the end of the day, I remember saying to somebody, "If you cut off my legs and I'll just be a body on a wheelchair, I just want to be there for my children." So yes, that's the
This is so much to take in. I mean, I really appreciate you sharing this, and I'm all emotional on this side. And thank you, first of all, like I said, for opening up and telling us, because I don't even want to imagine, but I see you now, and I know that the surgery was a success, and I'm so pleased that you and your family had your back and did not stop looking for what was actually a different diagnosis, a second opinion.
absolutely. Yeah.
Because actually, I mean, I'm just trying to get my head around this. I mean, you're sitting there after surgery and the doctor comes to you, "Well, look, you know, basically you can go home. I've got nothing more. I can't do anything for you," which is actually, it's terrible bedside manners, and it's absolutely horrific. And you know, somebody very smart once said to me, now, the smart person is my husband, who himself had terminal cancer and was given 12 months to live. And he said to me that the diagnosis is actually just somebody's opinion and a prognosis. It turned out to him, for him, it was like that. It was just somebody's opinion and a prognosis that turned out to be, well, I mean, it's 12 years down the line, and for you as well. So I am so in awe also of the way your family embraced this and looked for alternatives, because we are allowed to look for alternatives and get second opinions. A lot of people don't realize that you are your own best advocate. You have to fight for your life. You're living with this
Yeah, definitely.
diagnosis, prognosis, or opinion.
Yeah. I as a physio on a regular basis, when people get upset at doctors and things, I mean, I am quite upset about that surgeon that just gave me, but that's a different story. But I say to them, you do realize medicine, it's not an exact science because everybody's bodies react differently to everything. So quite often the doctors aren't actually to blame all the time. Mistakes are made because we are only human and they're just going on the evidence that they've got. But
Course.
we can all change that
Yeah.
evidence by just being as positive as we can and just fighting for that next level. I do believe that being positive really, really helps that as well. Just saying, no, I'm not giving up to this and
Exactly. A
seeing them.
mindset, a positive mindset can really do so much, because with me, I firmly believe my negative mindset contributed to me being diagnosed, because I had very toxic thoughts and I had a very, very trying time in my life, and I think that really contributed to me being ill. And I've subsequently changed and turned my life around with mindset. So we know, I mean, it's been proven that your the connection with your brain and the rest of your body is
It's
so
so
important.
strong, so powerful. Yeah. And I think until you go through things like this, you maybe don't appreciate how powerful, people say you can think yourself better or you can think yourself sick. And it's true. Obviously, I couldn't think myself better when you do have a tumor, but yes, as you say, you can make it a lot worse. Yeah.
Exactly. And now just take us back to you are on the verge of surgery and they give you all these options. Now, I gather that your bladder was taken and part of your bowel.
Yes. So, unfortunately, where my cancer was, it's just so close to everything that although I think the tumor was about 4 centimeters, so it's quite large but not huge, but it was just in a particularly bad place, so it was quite near the sphincter. So basically they had to take that bit out because I would have no control, so I actually have a lot of my bowel left, which I kind of got my head around, and it was on and off whether they were going to take the bladder or not. And I kept on really, really hoping that they wouldn't. But my surgeon said, look, the larger the margins we can take, the higher the success rate. So, yes, they ended up taking my bladder. And I think even right up to the before she put me under, I kept on saying, are you sure? And she said, well, I'll have a look to make sure, to make sure I definitely need to take it. But yes, she did need to take it. So, and actually, after the surgery, she ended up telling me that they did find some cancer cells within the bladder. So it was just as well they had taken it. But yes, the urostomy is actually probably more annoying than the colostomy. It's just not as controllable.
Of course. And yeah, I mean, my very, very first guest on Stoma for Life was also a double ostomate. She'd had surgery when she was 3 years old and she was given little chance of survival, also due to a very rare form of cancer as a child. And she ended up being a fashion model with two bags. So
Amazing.
before I started on my personal journey, I didn't even know that something like that could happen, that you could have a urostomy as well. So
Yes.
I think it's just marvelous what they can do and how your body
Of course.
adapts.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. So we go camping quite a lot in New Zealand, and camping is so much easier when you don't need to go and find a toilet in
Yeah.
things places. When you can control it all yourself, really. It's
Yeah.
great.
We have to see the positive in everything, and that definitely is a positive. Of course, of course. We are going to have a short commercial break, and we'll be back shortly.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I am sitting across virtually Louise Richards, all the way in New Zealand. And she just shared her absolutely moving story when she was diagnosed with cervical cancer and eventually ended up flying all halfway across the world to have life saving surgery. Now, you said that you woke up with two bags, and I'm sure it took some adjusting to get to, I mean, I just have one bag, and it took time. Now you had two bags. Can you walk
Yeah.
us through that,
Well,
perhaps?
if anybody's had a small child, especially boys, and you change a nappy when they're little, that's how I felt trying to change my urostomy all the time. I had no control and it just kept on spraying me. But now I've got a little, still don't have control over it, but I now know how to cope with it a little bit better.
I suppose, well, with everything, you know, it takes time to adjust and get your head around it. But you also said before the break, you know, what the alternative would have been something completely off the cards. I mean, that's something you nobody wanted. And now you woke up and they caught everything. You said they thankfully also took the bladder because obviously there were cancer markers or cancer cells in there already. And you wanted to obviously not have to go through the whole process again. And I suppose you were given eventually the all clear.
Yes, I have been given the all clear. When I was given the all clear in hospital, just that they had got the margins, it was just an amazing feeling, even though, yeah, I don't know how long you were in hospital after your surgery, but it's very, very painful. I mean, the surgery I had was called a full pelvic excenteration, and they basically just take out everything. And I remember trying to stand up for the first time. It was terrific. I couldn't stand up straight, and it was awful. It was so sore for so long. But yeah, so getting that sort of good news in hospital just at least pushed me along a little bit. Because of my oh, did your stoma take long to work? Mine didn't work for ages, so I was getting thinner and thinner because I wasn't allowed to eat anything.
No, it did work from the beginning, but I had problems with blockage because of all the medication. It's sort
Of
of
course, yeah.
I you know it just didn't it blocked then. It did work, but it blocked, and so it was it wasn't nice until I was actually home and started eating regularly and no medication because I tend to not take kindly to medicine.
No, it's silly, isn't it? The medication that you get for the pain actually ends up making everything almost sorer because it's the one that's thing that's stopping everything working.
Exactly. Now, obviously, you recovered here in the UK, but then had to make your way all the way to New Zealand. Now, I was a flight attendant for 30 years before my surgery. And I remember my very first long haul flight was all the way to South Africa to see my parents. That was 2.5 months after surgery. And I was so frightened. And my husband said, "Why? You've done this for 30 years." I said, "Yes, but I'm on the other end now. I'm on the other side. I am just a passenger. And I feel this is so new. I don't know how my stoma is going to react, how I'm going to feel." It was a 10-hour flight, and I'm telling you, I had all those worries were unfounded. They had no reason for concern at all. But
No, people kept on saying to me, "Oh, what happens if your bag, like a bag of crisps, just blows up?" And I was like, "Oh my goodness." And then going through security, you think, "Oh my, it's awful." And then I just walked through security and it didn't beep because it's not metal. And I just thought, "Oh, okay, that's fine." I have had a few situations where I've had to go through the scanners and you just say to them, and they're lovely. I think they must have been trained quite well now to understand that there's people like that. I actually was very, very fortunate that my auntie paid for me to go business class home, which was helpful because I had so many scars all over the place. I still couldn't sit properly, so I was able to lie down in business class. I'll probably never be able to afford that ever again, but for that, it was lovely. And I didn't need to queue to go to the toilet like you would in a normal flight as well. So it was quite nice that I was able to just do that, which took some of the stress away. But I understand what you mean. Going on a flight is just, yes,
I know, I
scary.
know. But I can assure anybody listening, it's all manageable. And I've actually done a complete show about air travel or traveling with a stoma. And because there are a few tips and tricks, but it's manageable and it shouldn't leave us hiding at home or not wanting to go on a trip because we'd miss out so much.
100%. Yeah, definitely.
So tell us about your life now, because I do know you, and I mentioned that you've got horses, you do horse riding, you are obviously working as a physiotherapist, which I think is like from the start the best possible way to actually start your healing and your recovery, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, that it really helped, the fact that I know how to strengthen everything. So gentle Pilates and things like that, and just even just I've got very big scars on my legs. They ended up taking one of my quads and making it sort of a pelvic floor in my, I don't know, it's very, very
Oh
clever
my.
anyway. Yeah, so it was really useful for strengthening and just mobility. But and having two children, I just couldn't stop. So it took me a while. I can't remember when I first started trying to run again, and that was an issue actually. The running did get things moving probably faster than I wanted to. But now, a few years on, I can run 10K or so. Yeah, I don't really want to run much further than that, to be honest.
That is
I do.
that's a lot in any case. And anybody's booked 10 kilometers.
Yeah, I do eventing with horse riding, so I do cross country and show jumping and dressage. And yes, I've just taken up CrossFit in the last 6 months. As I said, I'm not overly good at it, but that's nothing to do with the stoma bags. So it's just body strength and just learning new things. So
And I mean, that's just so important, body strength. We want to age with this body as strong as possible, and we've got to invest in it now. I mean, I'm at the end of my 50s, and I'm doing exercises every single day just for mobility, flexibility, and because I just don't want that to hinder me in really old age, not to be able to move.
Interestingly, on the CrossFit Facebook page today, they said two of your best assets that you have at the moment is time and health. So invest everything, because the healthier you are, the more time you will have. And
Absolutely.
I quite like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said earlier on, it's something that you sort of take for granted because you just feel, oh, well, everything's hunky-dory, everything's fine. And then you get presented with something like that and you reevaluate your life and you actually realize how precious your time is.
Yeah, it's so precious. You always think it'll happen to somebody else, and then suddenly it happens to yourself. My friend, actually, I just spoke to today, got this diary for Christmas from somebody, and it asks you lots of questions about your life and what your goals are and things. And one of them is, on your deathbed, what would you like to be remembered for? And she said, what would you say about that? And I said, oh, because of where I've been, it's a really tricky question. I don't know what I want to be remembered for, but on your deathbed, you want to sit and be proud of the things that you've done in your life. And as I said to her, I said, everybody says, oh, YOLO, you only live once, let's have another drink. And it's like, no, you only live once. So enjoy it. Travel. Don't have that other drink. Wake up in the morning feeling good. I'm not saying don't drink alcohol and have a few drinks if you want to, but wake up in the morning thinking, what are we going to do today? Let's have an adventure. Let's not lie here feeling terrible, because life actually, unfortunately, does pass us by, and we only have one chance at this life, and it really, you really want to live it to the best of your ability.
Yeah, absolutely. What true words. And I can so relate because I was asked something similar also a couple of months ago, and I said to my friend, I actually feel only now am I actually truly living, because I walk through life with open eyes and I take nothing for granted anymore. I really cherish every single moment. I've got two boys as well. I cherish every single moment with my family, with my children, and I can find joy in just the simplest of things, even if it's just a walk in the snow or in the rain, in the sun. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Just being able to walk and being here.
I agree. There was a few times, people, you sometimes don't want to tell them your story. You don't want people to look at you and feel sorry for you, because sometimes, like what you're saying, I can be down just going for a walk with the kids, go to the park, and they'll be playing, and the laugh of kids having the most amazing time just fills your heart, and you just think, oh, this, I'm so lucky to be here and be present in that moment and just enjoy life. And I'm not looking at them through a phone or anything like that. You just being present in that time, and it can just fill your heart with just so much joy, which I believe I wouldn't have had if I didn't go through this journey. And I'm not saying, I would love to be normal, as I've said before, as the normal, whatever that means. But it also has made me appreciate life so much more. And I hope that my children think that as well, because they often ask me about my bags. Why? Oh, I wish you didn't have them. Why do you have them? And they know that if I didn't have them, well, they think that I'd still be sick. But I say they saved my life, and I just hope that they look at life, I don't know, and just enjoy everything that they can.
I am sure you are. Well, I mean, you are an example to your children. You lead by example. And if you go consciously through life, I am sure they will as well, because they learn, children learn from us and they copy us.
True, true, yeah.
I know that there is a special song. Now, I can't play it here now, but I know there is a special song that is more like an anthem for you. I think it's the fight song.
It is. It is.
Rachel Peloton or something, her name is.
Yeah. It's a great song. My sister sent it to me when I was in hospital, and she came in one day to visit me, and she said, I listened to this on the radio, and I feel this is your song. And I listened to it, and it's great. And even when I feel down now, that I don't feel down nearly as much as I used to, then I put it on, and it's great. Brilliant song.
I invite my listeners to, if you don't know the song, listen to the fight song, or try and find your own song. Make it your anthem. There's nothing wrong with it, and having an anthem. And at the moment, I'm going through my own personal transformation, and I've actually made it a habit of just dancing to one song every single day, and it's just so invigorating. And I'm going to take fight song after the show and listen to it. So We are almost at the end of the show, and you've shared so much with us, and there are so many things we take away from it. And I mean, for me, I think the most important thing was that you went and had a second opinion, which in my case was the same because I was also misdiagnosed and sent home with a cream, and I didn't believe in that. In what she told me I had, and I also went and I investigated, and I think that to me is the most important thing. Go for that second opinion, but perhaps take us through what you have taken from this journey.
Yeah, you only get one chance at life. You know, this is not a dress rehearsal. Look after yourself, look after your loved ones, and don't worry about the small things. I think I came out, you know, when you're young, you're worried that you're overweight, that you're wearing the wrong things, that you're, you know, and you try to please other people all the time. Become a little bit more selfish, I think that I've become a little bit more selfish and just looking after myself, my family, and not just saying yes to people because I feel I should. Yeah, it's your life. Obviously, be kind to people, but just have the best. Go and live the best journey. Travel as well. Traveling is great. Don't be afraid.
Well, I can second that. Travel is wonderful, and you said something that's key because we always try and say, okay, one day I'll travel, one day, but we don't know what's in store for us. We don't know when this one day is. So seize the moment, do it now when you're able to. I read an article which was in relation to people in retirement age, where a lot of people that have then they. All they do, they strive for retirement, and when they retire, like 6 months later, they die because there's all of a sudden, you hear this a lot. And this article was all about, if you're able to and you can, use that time now. Don't say, I will only do it when, because when might never ever come. So do it now. And
Yes,
yes, like you
definitely.
said, travel is great.
It is. It's the fabulous to just see how different people live, and yeah, no, it's brilliant. Just open your eyes to new adventures.
Absolutely. Well, we traveled all the way to New Zealand. I'm so pleased you shared your story with us, Louise. And
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It was lovely.
my absolute pleasure. I've taken so much away from this conversation, and I'm sure my listeners have as well. I wish you all the best going forward, and
Thank you. You too.
take care. All the best. Bye for
All
now.
right. Cheers. Thanks. Bye.